traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit energycitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
Good evening and welcome to the History of Alchemy podcast. I'm Travis Dow.
And I'm Pete Coleman from the Bohemican podcast.
Today we're going to talk about Samuel Danforth. And he's an alchemist or an alchemy enthusiast from the colonial days of the American colonies. And before you go off and Google Samuel Danforth, our Samuel Danforth is not to be confused with another person by the same name who lived from 1626 to 1674. So that would be the wrong guy. And that guy is also very interesting. He's a Puritan minister, preacher, poet, and astronomer. But he was born in England and moved to Massachusetts. Also went to Harvard. So it gets kind of confusing. So if you look up the Wikipedia for Samuel Danforth, you're looking at the wrong guy. Our Samuel Danforth, if you're still with us,
I'm with you,
was born in Dorchester, Massachusetts in 1696 and graduated from Harvard College in 1715, which the other SD graduated in like 1680-something, so they're pretty close together. And in fact, both of those Samuel Danforths had sons named Samuel Danforth, and one of them is also famous enough to be mentioned here or there. So, but back to our Sammy. Yeah, so what's interesting is during his stay in Harvard is, we've mentioned this before, but Harvard included classes on alchemy, and this was kind of I don't know if it was common or popular, but this was definitely something you could study there. And so he started collecting, he was very interested in alchemy, started collecting some books, including a manuscript, Compendium Physicae by Charles Morton. And Morton was a Puritan who emigrated to Massachusetts in 1686, so kind of a contemporary.
And this is an interesting point, too. Some of our listeners might be familiar with this, that Harvard was really a religious-based institution at this time during the colonial days of America. And so it wouldn't be unheard of for Puritan sort of viewpoints to be in the classroom here, as well as having that connection to alchemy. Because at the time, we're talking about the late 1600s, early 1700s, correct?
Yeah.
So that there was a connection between religious belief and alchemy. It wasn't really considered an occult outside the circles of religious influence.
And in fact, there's enough Puritan alchemy connections that it might warrant a show one of these days, because it comes up quite a bit. According to the Alchemy Journal, and I'll give more details on where you can find that at the end, his compendium was a kind of a blend of science of the time and also with Aristotle and that kind of thing. And as an example, one kind of long section was devoted to the artifice of gold by alchemy. Alchemy spelled with a Y. It's almost like the old chemistry kind of thing. And also, or the finding of the philosopher's stone. Philosopher's stone looks like it has too many Ys in it. And it even makes the claim that some have done it. Such are called the adept, or adepti, as it's spelled. And he listed among them Lully, Ramon Lull, we've done an episode on him, Paracelsus, which we've done an episode, and his disciple, Van Helmont, which also a really interesting character.
You know, so Danforth really made Cambridge his home. It's just a stone's throw away from the college itself, so he was pretty close to where he would be really kind of getting into the area of intellectual discussions on alchemy. At that time, you know, he learned to kind of dabble in a lot of different fields and really kind of test the waters on what was offered at Harvard. Danforth not only became a probate judge, but he also kind of dabbled in medicine, okay? So he was kind of a man of many different talents. And as a matter of fact, he got to the point where he was offering smallpox inoculations in the 1730s during one of the outbreaks. And so that was kind of somewhat important as well. Okay, so during the smallpox epidemic of that 1730 year, you can imagine there was a lot of hysteria going around about how many people would catch this and can we contain it. Cambridge itself, as a township, voted its disapproval and asked Danforth to remove his patients to where they couldn't infect anybody else. So you can see the quarantine aspect of what was going on with this. However, you know, he was still very well respected for reaching out to the community and trying to take care of the smallpox epidemic, so much so that he was elected to the council in the upper house of the Massachusetts Colonial Legislature, which was a pretty high station, in 1739, just 9 years after the start of the epidemic. You know, he remained a member of that body for over 30 years, so mm-hmm. he was well entrenched in the body politic of Massachusetts.
Yeah. So also according to a blog post, I found that he may have started his alchemical library as early as 1721. He also had some noteworthy success as a chief justice in Massachusetts, which he served for some 34 years. Now, alchemy isn't just, but I don't want to tie in his alchemical reputation with his medical reputation or his reputation as a judge, because in fact, when his reputation as an alchemist kind of grew, he started to become publicly ridiculed. And this actually happened in the press in 1754, specifically for his alchemical studies. So keep in mind that, alchemy already was kind of, you know, past its peak and was already kind of seen as you know, kind of either a charlatan thing or it had a bad reputation as, you know, not even being scientific anymore because there were already other theories out there. What's interesting to me is that in 1773, now this is, you know, getting really close to the revolution already, he wrote to his longtime friend Benjamin Franklin, who you may have heard of, and he even offered Benjamin Franklin a piece of the Philosopher's Stone. So this I found really interesting. So Franklin himself didn't really, you know, despite all of his other experiments and his vast curiosity and this entire scientific knowledge, he wasn't really interested in laboratory alchemy itself, but he did kind of just within the scientific community, he did know several active practitioners of, you know, experimental alchemy, and he was also a leading member of the Ephrata and Fairmont Park communes.
Now, Travis, this is really important for those of us that love Benjamin Franklin. I mean, he was just one of those great American figures that you just, yeah, you just can't get enough information about the guy. He was a very well-known person in certain circles within not only England but also France.
Yep.
He was a frontiersman. One of my favorite stories about Benjamin Franklin was when he was coming over to visit the who's who of France. He wore a coonskin cap and bear furs, and they thought he might as well walked off the surface of Mars. I mean, he was a rock star. Coming from the wild and open area. So he was a great guy to befriend, because this is important as well. Danforth wanted to be connected to Benjamin Franklin for a couple reasons, and Franklin wanted to be connected to the circles that Danforth traveled around in alchemy, because still in Europe, between the American and French societies, there was a big love for alchemical sort of study still.
Yeah.
And so they both kind of had this sort of mutual relationship and want and need from each other's friendship.
I think it's really interesting that just such a scientific figure like Benjamin Franklin that, you know, we all associate with these big inventions and, you know, really creative mind, that he did actually have an interest in this. So this is kind of new to me that, you know, this was still a time period where alchemy was on the decline, but Benjamin Franklin, in fact, I have a quote here. So when Benjamin Franklin wrote back on the 25th of July in 1773, he says, "I rejoice, therefore, in your kind intentions of including me in the benefits of that inestimable stone, which curing all diseases, even old age itself." So remember, elixir of life and philosopher's stone are often, you know, interchangeable,
yeah.
Right? So, and he says, "So this cure for all diseases will enable us to see the future glorious state of our America, enjoying in full security her own liberties and offering in her bosom a participation of them to all the oppressed of other nations." So he's writing about the Philosopher's Stone here, you know, 3 years before the Declaration of Independence.
I almost want to salute this.
It's weird.
Passage. It sounds like the American flag is flying right in front of us when he's saying this. Yeah, it is interesting. I don't know if he was just, Travis, at one point just trying to ingratiate himself to Danforth by saying all these flowery prose about,
sure,
you know, an emerging democracy.
And that could very well be, yeah.
Yeah, and then afterwards going, geez, a philosopher's stone, he's really bringing that up again.
Yeah.
You know, who knows what he was thinking.
It could be, or maybe he's thinking, hey, you know, we're the ones to discover it, not some country in Europe. So
yeah, but
hard to say his intentions. But
going
yeah,
back to what I just said about his connections, how important, not important, it's essential that he had the French, Benjamin Franklin had the French on his side. Any way he can get in, if it's by hook or by crook or by having a connection to what was considered, you know, maybe an outside level of science with alchemy, if that got him into the courts in France to kind of really push the American experiment along, then so be it. And I think that if he was able to write like this, then this might be seen by other, you know, alchemists that, you know, he was of like-minded, you know, a thought process
yeah.
here.
Yeah, unfortunately, I couldn't find a whole lot more on his life. So if anybody has ever heard of this guy before, by all means, send it in and let me know. But he died in 1777, and then his son, Samuel Danforth Jr., and not the only Samuel Danforth Jr. living in Massachusetts at the time, but he Samuel Jr. inherited his books. Samuel Danforth Jr. also was interested in medicine and scientific kind of studies and had a career in this, but the cost of following that career forced him to donate his father's books to the Boston Athenaeum in 1812. Now, the books, there's a lot of interesting stuff about these books. So they're all signed by both Danforths. They're heavily annotated, which is pretty cool because it kind of shows, like, you know, over
some validity.
Yeah. It's like 25 years of study of you know, just of alchemy kind of written in the margins of these books here. So there's some 21 volumes. And a lot of the kind of usual suspects that you would expect in an alchemical library, including like Philalethes' Secrets Revealed, which was written in London in 1699, which I bring up because we did an episode on Philalethes, who's another colonial alchemist. Yeah, and in fact, in that same blog post, Pete found an obituary of Samuel Danforth. So,
well, I'll tell you, I've used my skills in my mad skills in family genealogy, and this. As a genealogist or an amateur genealogist, I'll tell you that this is like gold to find stuff like this.
Yeah.
You know, so this is what it said after the death in 1777, that Dr. Reverend Ezra Stiles of Newport was so interested in what was going on here that he had to say this in his diary that was found. Last week, the Honorable Samuel Danforth Esquire of Cambridge died in Boston at the age of 81. He was deeply studied in the writings and adepts, believing that the philosopher's stone, a reality, and perhaps for chemical knowledge, might have passed among the chemists. All right. So, and the rest, interesting, it's kind of written in Hebrew.
There's a Hebrew word there, yeah.
Yeah, which is strange. I mean, that might be something for a novel to kind of look into. But, you know, to have this, to actually have this in print, to say that it was important that he believed in the philosopher's stone, you know. Yeah, I mean, that still would have been eye-catching back in the late 18th century to see someone actually write that in an obituary, mentioned in someone's diary that would have been published. So again, that's some great stuff, you know, for this family to kind of have that information about who was Samuel Danforth.
Yeah, he seemed like a really interesting character, and I wish I knew more about his life and things surrounding him. But unfortunately, I couldn't find much. But what I did find is due to a blog called boston1775.blogspot.co.uk, and there's a short article on him which was called Dr. Samuel Danford Smuggling Hay, which was actually talking about his son. So, and a lot of that information he got from alchemylab.com, which is the alchemy journal. And there was a really long article, which is also where I got some other information from, like Philalethes, for instance, called The History of Alchemy in America. And I'll probably use that as another source for a couple other episodes. A lot of interesting characters in that article, too, if you want to take a look, going all the way up to the 20th century, really.
And Travis, so. This is our second program on an American dealing with alchemy. Is that correct?
So far, yes.
So far, yes.
Yeah, I have a couple others on my sites, and
right.
And also, there's a couple kind of secret societies or you know, let's call them esoteric communities, which also, you know, basically the ones that I mentioned with Benjamin Franklin. And also there is a kind of a Puritan connection with some of these guys. So that's something I'll do some reading on and look into a little bit more. But yeah, really interesting stuff. So there you have it.
Great. Well, thanks very much.
You've been listening to the History of Alchemy podcast with Travis Dow and Pete Coleman. For more information about this episode, and other information about alchemy, alchemists, and related subjects, visit historyofalchemy.com. Find us on iTunes, subscribe, review, and don't forget to rate us. We'd love to hear from you. Send your comments, ideas, and corrections to podcast@historyofalchemy.com or get in touch via Facebook on the History of Alchemy podcast page or Twitter @AlchemyPodcast. Tune in to our sister podcast all about the Czech Republic, Bohemicon, which is also available on iTunes or on Bohemicon.com. Until next time on the History of Alchemy podcast, thank you for listening.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.